They hate each other's guts, they like working customers, they trust us, and they want to share the data. And so basically, we feel really nice, you know, and so nobody approaches them like it doesn't happen. It's not like data does, so they virtually answer, they don't want to. I think it's the problem of how groups think that you're smart and they're not. Because you don't know what you want. It's thinking of how that can happen. That was kind of the thing, that cracked the thing, and when we had it all worked out, it was like, oh, it's just a real simple separation. I know it's really annoying, but the idea is that you're smart.
There, I got the hall to the right.
I like it's pretty clear.
Which might potentially be
okay.
So one of them will be for the system audio.
Okay.
And then this one here is for recording the talk. Have you already signed the form to say you wanted it recorded? Okay, then yeah. So this one's for us right here.
Perfect.
Yeah. I have to put them both on there.
I'll do this.
Could be a technical emergency. Marie will help you out from here.
Okay. Is it on over?
Yeah,
yeah,
it's on. Everything's okay. Good. Just slip it in your pocket and then just let me know when you want to start.
I'm going to 201. Are you okay? Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay.
Okay, I can stop. Hello, good morning, everyone. I'm Luigi Rizzo, and I'm here to present some work that has been done mostly by my student Daniele Di Proietas' master thesis. Daniele graduated in Pisa a couple of months ago, and now is doing an internship at VMware in Palo Alto. So this work is about porting the internal OpenVSwitch module from Linux to FreeBSD. And this is something we did over last year after a number of things and modifications that we had done to OpenVSwitch. And we'll explain why we started this work and what kind of results we have achieved. So this is the executive summary. The goal was to have something that would allow us to reach somehow feature parity with Linux, have the same set of features both in FreeBSD and Linux. OpenVSwitch is a project that started as an implementation of OpenFlow, building some components in user spaces, some components in the kernel, and the kernel development focused on Linux, of course, because it was the most widespread platform for that type of project. Now, in our work, we followed a strategy that we also used in many other projects of this kind. When porting stuff from one OS to another one, especially kernel modules, we always try to avoid modifications to the source code, to the original source code, and rely on writing wrappers of some kind, whether it be a preprocessor macros or libraries for conversions or other types of modification that allow us to reuse as much as possible the original code without any source code modification. Sometimes this is not possible on every single bit of the code. We have to do some small modification, but it turns out that quite often they are related to bugs or misassumptions in the original code, and so we try to upstream those changes. As a byproduct, the OpenVSwitch code required a module called Netlink, Netlink Sockets, which is similar to routing sockets that we have in FreeBSD. And so we developed that Netlink module from scratch. The end result is that performance of this kernel module is as good as the one on Linux, so we didn't lose much in writing our adaptation layers. And the good thing is that the amount of modification that were required were minimal, and we are trying to upstream them to VMware, Nisira, whoever is managing the OpenVSwitch project. So that will remove excuses from supporting FreeBSD in the upstream code. Now, if you are not interested in the details, in the technical details, you can go because I will focus my presentation on the actual technical details. Hopefully, the approach that we follow will be useful also for porting other kernel components from Linux to BSD or from other operating systems to BSD. So I will start with a little bit of background and all the buzzwords that are involved with this software-defined networking story. So software-defined networking is an approach to computer networking which has been probably used for 20 years, but formalized only recently with this idea where people try to decouple the control plane where high-level decisions are made and the data plane or the forwarding plane, as people may call it, where actually packets are moved or modified. And the the trend now is to try and formalize the interface between these two components so that you can have software and hardware from different vendors interoperate using a common language. This research has been driven, as my student says, these are his slides, by data centers complexity and in general by configurations where you have to put together a number of routers, switches, etc., from different vendors, and management becomes a nightmare without a common language. What Open vSwitch in particular, the software that we use has been particularly useful is in virtualization context, because in that environment, you not only need to move packets from one virtual machine to another one, but quite often you need to play with encapsulation of various kinds. And having a little bit of flexibility in doing that in software is extremely useful and flexible. So OpenFlow is this common language and the specification of this common language that makes the controller and the switch communicate with each other. The OpenFlow specification also includes a definition of the standard functions that switches should implement and then controllers should use, and also gives switches some possibility to implement vendor-specific functions that you might typically find in hardware, such as access list or longest prefix match, etc., etc. So in this environment, the controllers are generally pieces of software running on a machine close to the switches or on a centralized server that handles a number of switches. There might be some redundancy, et cetera, et cetera. And the switches might be made in hardware or in software. Typically, the software choice is the one that you use for interconnecting virtual machines because, of course, you have very little hardware in between them. Open vSwitch is an open source implementation of the controller and the software switch. And this has been started, it's an effort that has been started by Nisira, who is the company was behind the initial OpenFlow specification. Nisira is now part of VMware. It has been acquired maybe a couple of years ago for a significant amount of money, much less than WhatsApp, but still. Open vSwitch is a so-called multi-layer software switch in that its operation are based on a number of fields that are extracted from multiple layers in the packet. And the data plane is implemented in software, and yes, it's a switch in that it deals mostly with layer 2 frames. The data path, and we will see another picture later in Open vSwitch, is the part where packets are moved or modified. It's the block down here. We see here an example where a data path connects two so-called virtual ports, but they can be physical interfaces, tap interfaces connected to virtual machines, tunnels, etc., etc. And the switch normally has multiple ports, input and output ports. What happens in the data path, at least in Open vSwitch, is that the data path is a big hash table which uses a number of fields from the packet as the search key, literally 15 or 20, everything from the MAC headers and type fields, IP addresses, packet lengths, etc. If there is an exact match in the hash table, then the data path executes the action associated with the match, which might be forward to another port, do an encapsulation, many other modifications to the packets are supported. If there is not an exact match, then the packet is forwarded to a user space process, which here is the OVS with switch T, which runs through the rules that are the configuration of our software switch. Going through these rules generates an action associated with this particular packet. Then the packet is pushed back into the data path, and at the same time, a new rule is inserted into the hash table. So next time we'll get a packet with the same features, all the features, including the packet length, I mean. Then we can act on them directly in the data path without going through user space. So the first packet of a flow, or the first packet with some peculiar feature in one of those many fields, will be forwarded to user space. All the others will go through directly through the data path. So stay within the kernel if this is implemented in the kernel, or stay in the process that implements the data path otherwise. One of the features of, or the missing features of OpenVSwitch is that unlike the high-level specification for OpenFlow, the high-level specification says that you can match packets using a subset of the fields or wildcards or max, etc. In the implementation of the data path, at least in the original version, there are no wildcards. Hash tables do not generalize well to wildcards or partial matches. And so the implementation included very specific rules. The new version of OpenFlow implements wildcards I would call it a hack, a solution where you have multiple hash tables and there is an order in which you look up through these hash tables. So you look first in the most specific one, then the next one, which has some bits masked, and so on and so on and so on. The decision on how many hash tables to use, how many bits to use as mask, etc., is made by the upper software layer, so RVS, VSwitchD, etc. Turns out that matching with wildcards in this version with those megaflows is more efficient in terms of number of entries that you can allocate in the data path. But then you end up with multiple hash tables, so the individual search step becomes more expensive. So it solves a scalability problem at the price of a slightly worse performance. Anyways, this is just a detail of the implementation of the data path. For those used to the firewalls that we normally have in FreeBSD, so IPFW, PF, et cetera, we typically look up a packet against a sequence of rules, and when we find a match, whether the first one or the last one or whatever, we stop. So it's a process that has a complexity proportional to the number of rules. Not in this case. In this case, the time is constant, but the hash table might become huge. Now, there are two implementations of the data path in the OpenVSwitch source code. One is in user space, and the other one is in kernel. The user space data path, I'm not sure why they started that, whether it was for testing or for some other reason. But anyways, the original implementation runs on top of just a PF packet. That was something we started working on a couple of years ago. And we initially made a port of this implementation to FreeBSD using BPF instead of PF packet. The performance was very bad. At least in the original implementation, we could barely, and even in the original PF packet version, could barely do about 50,000 packets per second, which is very low. We made a number of changes upstream, some of them, and also made it run very fast on top of NetMap. So we reached a performance of around 3 million packets per second at the time in user space. Of course, the operation of the data path is extremely simple, so just a hash table lookup. So the slowness was due to bad code around the path that passes packet to the hash table. So it was a low-hanging fruit in a way. There is now work in progress in the OpenVSwitch code to run on top of the PDK, so I expect similar kind of performance as the one that we got on top of NetMap. And that solves, for the most part, the performance problem for the user space version. However, the user space version is not terribly used for with the virtual machines. With the virtual machines, you typically have those VMs attached to tap interfaces. And so when you want two virtual machines to communicate and use OpenVSwitch for that, if you have a user space or a data path, you have packets going from user space, the VM, first VM, to the kernel, then back again to user space to the data path, then back again to the kernel, then back again to the user space. So it's a long process. And you can have a couple of more transitions to user space depending on the architecture that the virtual machine uses for AO. So both the latency and the overhead that you have in this case is huge. So there is another alternative option for the data path, which is have it completely within the kernel. And in that sense, it mostly replaces the software switch or the bridge that Linux or FreeBSD or other operating system can have. Once again, OpenV switch includes only a Linux implementation of the internal data path, and actually that was imported into the Linux tree. So while they continue development of new version of the data path outside the tree, from time to time they get the sources from the VMware code and import them into Linux. And that is a very common choice for interconnecting virtual machines. The performance is mostly on par with the one of the standard Linux bridge or FreeBSD bridge, so anything between 500,000 and 1,000,000 packets per second, depending on the hardware, the configuration, the type of rules and matching that that you need to do. So this is more or less okay. I mean, barring use of technologies such as NetMap or DPDK, which can push you to much higher speeds, that's the most that you can achieve with the standard SK buff and your internal packet representation that that you have in Linux. So this is a picture that shows the architecture of OpenV switch. The upper part is what normally runs in user space and contains a series of modules that somehow interact with the controller, accept rules, and try to establish a path with the data path to inject rules or extract packets that need the processing in user space. And the bottom part, which could be in the kernel or in user space, as I said, is the one that actually moves packets around or applies the modifications to the packet. So in terms of code size, the upper part is quite big, and it's about 100,000 lines of code. And fortunately, already builds and runs on FreeBSD, so at least we don't have to worry about that porting that part. It would have been a nightmare otherwise. The internal part, the data part, is about 10,000 lines of code, so manageable in practice. What did we do, why, and what kind of techniques we used? As I anticipated, the goal was to port this kernel module to FreeBSD, and the motivations were multiple. First of all, we wanted to have feature parity with Linux. Second, we wanted to give some incentive to the VMware people to add support for FreeBSD. We have this experience also with QEMU KVM. We made some modification to KVM to support NetMap as a backend. When we approached the QEMU folks for upstreaming the changes, they said, "Oh, well, but we don't want to support a feature unless it is supported on any major operating system." And so, fortunately, NetMap was already standard in FreeBSD, and so we could push that change. And we were lucky because I'm a FreeBSD committer, and I mean, I could interact with the FreeBSD community to make it acceptable. But it's an unfortunate position where you have some feature that could benefit multiple open source projects, and nobody wants to make the first move and adopt a technology until the other makes the same step. So anyways, in this case, I'm worried that we might be in a similar position. So we might have changes to the kernel code that would need support to FreeBSD, but they wouldn't be adopted unless we had some commitment in FreeBSD for using this technique. So I think one thing that we should do at some point is make this work that we have done and make it available on FreeBSD either as a port or as a kernel module of some kind. And I'll elaborate on this, and perhaps we can discuss this a little bit. Anyways, apart from this initial goal related, strictly related to OVS, the other thing we wanted to do is take the chance of this creating this porting framework to be able also to port other modules from Linux to FreeBSD should it be necessary over time. There has been some effort in this area in the past. Hans-Peter Selaski, for instance, built a nice framework to build the webcam drivers in user space, though not within the kernel. I think there are some simple functions or device drivers, etc., which might deserve porting to the FreeBSD kernel The code that we developed to support this this particular port could be useful also in other cases. So the other thing that we wanted to do, and we have actually already done in Linux, the data part is actually made of two parts. One is the part where which makes the forwarding decision, basically the hash table. You get a packet in, you parse the field, and you figure out which should be the output interface for that particular packet. And the other part is the data plane itself. So you have a packet, you know, because of this forwarding logic, you know on which port it should be sent. Now you want some piece of software that can move packets fast from one port to another one. And we have such a thing. It's the Valley Switch, which uses NetMap. It's already part of FreeBSD. It's extremely fast and is also extremely flexible. One feature that we added recently, and it's already in FreeBSD, is the fact that we can modify the forwarding logic in the Valley Switch. Instead of implementing the standard learning bridge, we can pass it an arbitrary function. So a module can link to the Valley Switch and replace the forwarding logic with its own function. In this particular case, we could use the OpenV Switch forwarding logic to decide what to do to the packet, and then the data plane provided by Valley, which is extremely fast to move the packet around. And we had some experience with this specific modification in Linux by having this kernel module, kernel OpenV Switch module ported to FreeBSD. We could do the same thing on FreeBSD. And again, this would be a way to propose changes and performance improvements to the original OpenV Switch code. So the approach we use, as I mentioned, is create a kernel compatibility layer where we try to map Linux data structure, functions, methods, etc., to FreeBSD equivalents without, if possible, modifications. How? And that's the set of technical details that describe our experience. So we'll look again at the picture with OpenV Switch architecture. As I mentioned, the user space part is something that we mostly don't want to modify. Now, OpenV Switch, even though it has been implemented mostly on Linux, it was designed for portability. And so the parts that communicate with the operating system are abstracted in different modules. So for instance, this NetDev provider, which communicates with the equivalent of the routing socket on Linux, is a module that can be replaced with an OS-specific one. So there was already a NetDev BSD, which was originally used to communicate with the user space data path. We modified it a few years ago when we did a port from PF packet, which is the user space data path on Linux, to BPF, which was what we did for FreeBSD. And so this part in orange, yellow, whatever the color is, was already adapted to FreeBSD. We needed to make small changes there just because in some cases that module expected that if the system were using an internal data path, then it should have been Linux. Now, that was an assumption that is not true anymore. The other parts that we need to modify were, of course, the kernel module itself. We have Linux kernel code that compiles only on Linux, and we needed to build it on FreeBSD. And the part that communicates with this Linux kernel module, and in Linux, this uses a netlink socket, which is mostly equivalent to a routing socket. So this is something we didn't have on FreeBSD. We needed to create from scratch. Okay, this is again a replica of what happens in the data path, and the netlink socket basically is used to exchange this information between the data path and the control, including packets that need to be processed or modification to the hash table, inserting rules, removing rules, etc. Now, this is a partial list of the things that we needed to modify or re-implement in FreeBSD. And I'll go through some of them as we progress in the presentation. The ones that I skip are generally simple things that are handled by renaming function with macros or with trivial wrappers. So the first part is netlink sockets. And Well, Netlink sockets support many, many features, not just network configuration, even some other things. We did a very minimal port. Our initial implementation was just taking the routing socket, adding some extra checks on the message that were passed through the routing sockets, and so that in depending on the content of the message, we could associate the socket to a Netlink socket and then have perform different functions. But then after that, we decided to implement a completely standalone version of the Netlink socket as a separate module, and this is completely new code, mostly, well, new or derived from routing socket implementation. So this is the list of files that we have. The nlsoc.c.h from routing socket. This is just glue from equivalent BSD code. And the others are just implementation of the API. So this is probably all under BSD copyright. So I think there are no problem in including that in the FreeBSD kernel. It is a module, it is a protocol implementation, so it can be loaded dynamically. Unfortunately, as it is now, we cannot unload the protocol implementation in FreeBSD because there are the sockets might have a reference to the Netlink socket, but the module is not reference counted. So that's the reason why we cannot unload it. Somehow we will need to fix that in the future. Now, when it comes to building the kernel code into FreeBSD, the first difficulty that you have is that headers are generally specified in different ways and have different content in Linux and FreeBSD and in the various operating system. So we deal with that in four different ways. So first of all, in the port, we create a private directory include, which is populated with non-empty headers that override the system once. So let's say types.h, we might have a version of private version of types.h that contains definitions that we would normally find on Linux, but not on FreeBSD, or the FreeBSD ones would be incompatible. And these files are created manually. So far, well, I mean, the number of these files depends on the approach that you follow. This directory could even be empty, considering what we did in step two. But in the current implementation, we have about 35 files, so we try to separate the headers by functionality and about a total of 2,000 lines of code. Then we have another directory, include E, which contains empty headers. So in many cases, the code includes a ton of different headers, and it's not quite clear why, to me at least, why we would need a particular header for just one line. So we follow this approach. When the source file requires a particular header, and we only need one or two definitions for that particular header, instead of putting the definition there, we put that in a global file, and we create an empty header just to keep the compiler happy, so the compilation goes through. This global header with all the definition is created externally, and it's included forcedly through a compiler flag. So every compilation has a dash include plus the name of this header. And this basically overrides all the things that we couldn't solve in different ways with the non-empty headers or with the standard headers in FreeBSD. And then we have all other headers that we are taking from the standard USR include or kernel headers in FreeBSD. There might be very few of them in the end because most of the rest is overridden by the previous headers. So now this process is not perfect by any means. If the module is modified, the original source is modified and decides to add or use some new features in the header, then we might need to make some modification in this glue that is included everywhere. But other than that, I mean, this process seems to be very, very useful. When we did a port of the, we used the same approach to do a port of the IPFW and Aminet code both to Linux and Windows, and that worked very well. We used a similar approach to port the NetMap code from FreeBSD to Linux, and also there, the modification to this common header are very modest and rare. So I think this is an approach that we could follow also in other cases. And also, all the creation of the empty headers is managed by the make file. So in the make file, we just put a list of the names of the empty files that should be created, and then they are created and deleted when we do the various build or clean actions. Now, the next step is to remap network interfaces from Linux to FreeBSD. So we have IFNet, they have net device. They are reasonably similar, and again, we have the same problem over and over when we make these ports. In the NetMap port, we managed to do the mapping by simply renaming fields. Net device are a bit larger than IFNet. They contain more features than our IFNet. So importing from FreeBSD to Linux, you generally can just remap the fields. Importing from Linux to FreeBSD, we needed to create an extra data structure that contains all the fields that were not originally available, that are not available in the IFNet. And for the rest, there is a number of functions that we need to remap. So just as a reference, in case you end up doing similar work, dev get my name is similar to ifunit or can be implemented in terms of ifunit. NetEverX handler register basically can be solved by redirecting ifinput to a new function. DevQ transmit is equivalent to our iftransmit. AllocNetDev is our ifalloc, et cetera. So mostly we have the same functionality. It's just a matter of figuring out which is which and how to possibly preserve the old function if we override some of the pointers that are on the right-hand column here. RCU is the locking strategy that is used on Linux. It's a lock-free synchronization mechanism. It's patented. It works well for read-mostly situations. And so we didn't want to re-implement that. Now, the way RCU works is basically the read path has nothing to do. But the Linux forks are nice, and they place annotations, RCU read lock, RCU read unlock, around critical sections. They translate to no operation in the actual Linux implementation. In our case, that makes our life easy, because we can remap them to a read-write lock. Now, I'm only showing here what happens when you do the read lock, read unlock part. For the write part, there are some macros that basically try to acquire the lock so that all the readers are serialized, and then we do the modification and work again on it. This is implemented through a header file that we also force, of which we force the inclusion, rcupdate.h, and that mostly works. It might not be terribly performant because we replace an operation with a read lock on a mutex, but apart from that, I mean, in our simple tests, that didn't give much loss of performance. For sure, if we go on with this work, we might decide to talk to the VMware people and figure out whether there is a better locking strategy that applies to FreeBSD, but that's a subsequent step. Next step is for the user part, for the user land part. In Linux, there is a system call which is called EPOL. It's similar to our KQ. It's used to receive notification from multiple IO descriptors, both in read and write. And basically, the advantage of EPOL and KQ with respect to select or poll is that the former two have a constant cost, whereas the other ones are linear in the number of descriptors passed to the function. Now, there wasn't a real need to pass EPOL to use EPOL in the implementation of OpenV switch, because the number of file descriptors that is used is limited. They only have a handful of Netlink socket descriptors to handle. But still, we didn't want to make modification to the original code. So Daniele investigated a bit the options for doing that. He found that there were patches to implement EPOL on FreeBSD in the past, but they never went into the tree. Then he eventually settled for a completely user space remapping of the function into FreeBSD equivalent. The remapping is done completely in a header, and which is very short, 150 lines of code. It is not a complete implementation of EPOL, so it has some limitations. In particular, we only implemented the features that we needed, so only EPOL-in, no these close on exec or EPOL control mod, and also there is an issue with the fact that EPOL file descriptor are passed to a child process when you fork. In our case, KQ file descriptors are not passed, apparently, at least so it tells me. I don't know more about the details. I'm just saying that what he did was enough for the OpenVSwitch port, and we might want to investigate whether we could extend this wrapper for further applications that need to be ported and need EPOL. Now, I said that our initial goal was not to make any modification to the OpenVSwitch code, but then we ended up doing some small modification. In total, we had to modify 13 files, about 400 lines of diffs. The things that we encountered and that needed modification were the following. First of all, anonymous unions. In Linux, they use them a lot. In FreeBSD, we don't. I'm not sure if it is a limitation of the compiler, but I've seen this issue before. Anyways, in this case, there is a single file that has this feature, and the fix was easy. Just comment out the union keyword around the in the structure definition. That means that the structure is slightly bigger than the equivalent in Linux, which uses the union. The advantage is that if we make a mistake in using the union's fields, at least we don't overwrite some other fields. Linux, the memory allocator in Linux has a feature called k-size. So when you allocate a block of memory, the allocator gives you whatever it likes, at least as large as you requested, but might be larger. The OpenVSwitch code uses another call called k-size, which tells you the actual size of the block. So in case you need to extend the block, you might do it without reallocating. Now, there is a way to do it, because if you call realloc on a block, it doesn't really reallocate the memory if the original block is large enough. But the way the code is written wasn't easy to fix without modification. So basically, we had to make some special, some conditional code in that part that uses k-size. I had a discussion on the mailing list about implementing k-size in FreeBSD in the kernel. Basically, we have all the information already available. It's just a matter of adding or making this method public instead of static in a file. But, as usual, there was some rejection. I didn't feel like pursuing the issue that at the time also. Probably we can fix, at least for the time being, we can fix this problem by upstreaming the change in OpenVSwitch. The other thing that we often needed to modify were bugs in the original code. So for instance, there were some duplicate of wrong includes, which didn't work in our setting, printf formats. Some other times, there were some options that were overloaded. So for instance, if you, In some pieces of the code, the Linux identifier was defined, then the code assumed that there was a kernel data path, and otherwise there couldn't be a kernel data path because that only works on Linux. Now, it's a reasonable mistake that you make when you write the first implementation of a piece of code, but of course, now that if you want the code to be portable, you should decouple options as much as possible. And we discussed this with the OpenVSwitch people, who are really reasonable and open to accept our changes. And then we had to comment out a few blocks of code for features that we didn't port yet. VLAN support, IPv6 support, etc. Now, we didn't port them not because it's impossible or fundamentally very, very difficult to do, just because we were lazy and let's say we wanted to finish the port and figure out whether it worked and whether the main features of the system worked. So it's just a boring work to do that that can be done at a later time. So this is the list of missing features so far. We just have short ifdefs around this block. So we have no VLAN support, no IPv6, no tunnels, GRE, VXLAN, LISP, etc. For most of these things, the fixes are trivial. It's just a matter of finding the motivation, a suitable test environment, and then debugging the code as we implement it. Now, what are the results of this work? So we have a kernel module for Netlink sockets, which is, as I showed, is very small and can be quickly imported in FreeBSD. The licensing issues are not existent there. We have a source code wrapper that works to port the Open vSwitch kernel module to FreeBSD. Hopefully, can be used for the network-related functions. And the Open vSwitch kernel module is now working in FreeBSD. Performance is quite good. So Daniele did some tests comparing the performance of this Open vSwitch in FreeBSD and Linux. Forget the central column because these are not virtual machines. So performance might be hurt by the way the virtual machine is scheduled on the host. He had two simple test cases. One where the Open vSwitch was used with one port connected to a source who was generating traffic, and no one on the receive side. And another one where and there was a port connected for sending, another one for receiving. So in these experiments, it turns out that just sending and dropping a packet is more expensive on Linux than sending and forwarding the packet on the other side. On FreeBSD, is the other way around, possibly because of the choices he made. The dropping packets was cheaper in FreeBSD than in Linux. But as you see, the performance that we have is pretty good. We are above half a million packets per second, which is roughly the region of performance that we have for the standard FreeBSD bridging code. So we are pretty happy with the performance of the port. So what are we planning to do in the future? So we should add back the features that are missing, such as VLAN support, the tunnels, IPv6. Clean up the wrapper a little bit. Daniele's work was his thesis, so he had deadlines, so sometimes he had to cut corners and stop short and not do the polishing of code to which we are used in our project. We might want to rewrite parts of the kernel module that implements the hash table to improve performance. Not just for FreeBSD, as I mentioned here, but also in general in Linux. I think the current code is not terribly, it's not the best we can have. The peak performance that we reach with Open vSwitch, with Netmap as a forwarding plane is about 3 million packets per second. And I have colleagues at NEC, we did the same experiment with the PDK, and they reached the same level of performance. In comparison, the Vale switch can move 15 million packets per second per port. So there is a big, and the same for the PDK. So there is a big gap between the speed of a forwarding plane and the speed of Open vSwitch. So I think the way the hash table is implemented, the way the fields are extracted from the packet adds a lot of overhead to the processing of a packet. And then, of course, one thing that we want to do as soon as possible is to use the Vale as a switching fabric for the system so we could get the extra performance from the 500,000 packets per second to the 3 million packets per second without too much effort. So that's all we have so far. In terms of giving the code to FreeBSD, we need to do a little bit of cleanup of the code. Hopefully early in the summer we will have more time to polish the code and certainly commit the the Netlink socket as a port and distribute patches for the Open vSwitch port. Okay, I think I'm done. Any questions? Yeah?
I'm not totally clear on how you handle licensing.
So, okay. So the Netlink part is a completely new code, and we have written it or derived from BSD code. So that's BSD. For the other part, there is a lot of GPL code there. So I think the most we can do is a port. And so people want to use it, we create a module, build it, and link with the kernel. But then they need to be aware that it becomes GPL. Now, the thing is, we have the kernel part working. Now we can try to rewrite the parts that we are not happy with because of performance or because of licensing issues. And then at that point, we might end up with something that is completely BSD licensed. For instance, Intel has a DPDK version of an OpenFlow switch, which is not OpenFlow switch, implements similar features, and it's BSD licensed. So, and again, it's 10,000 lines of code, so it's not a monumental task. It's something that people who have interest in the task can afford doing. Yeah?
Can you give an insight into how the YPBSD performance on bare metal is so much better than this?
No, I don't have clear ideas, although he might have used slightly different systems, and so that might explain why there is a performance difference. So, I mean, again, those numbers are just for reference. Don't compare them because it wouldn't make a lot of sense. I'm just happy to see that we are in the same ballpark. Yes?
Have you tested your implementation on human machines?
No. But again, I don't think the performance is so low. In absolute terms, performance is so low that the machine architecture doesn't make a lot of difference. So I think NUMA, et cetera, would matter when you're up.
Some problems on Linux with OpenVSD machines. It is much slower than on human machines.
But, I mean, much slower than 500,000 packets per second, or?
I don't know.
Okay, so, I mean, these numbers are just bad. In absolute terms, they're just bad. I would expect almost another magnitude faster switching with DPDK or NetMap. So until you match that performance, it's not NUMA or not NUMA the issue. It's the poor performance of the system.
So
yeah,
two
Jim.
One, on the slide where you say you're going to use bales and switching fabric and OBS.
Yeah.
Are you going to include the full 14 tuple maps and all the rest of OpenFlow in that?
Yes, because basically the use of Val as a switching fabric means that Vale calls the Open vSwitch code to figure out which port should forward the packet to. And then Open vSwitch does whatever it wants.
And then I think the Firefly, so with real devices, DPDK vSwitch now is about 10.9 million packets.
Okay, could be. But it's not the Open vSwitch code. They have their own implementation. Yeah. Okay. No more questions? Oh, yes.
It might be a dumb question because I'm not familiar with this. Is it possible with OpenVSwitch on FreeBSD to define an hardware from the host as a port on OpenVSwitch? So everything that goes through this thing will go to OpenVSwitch first.
The switch runs in the host, so it also switches physical ports, if that's your question.
Yep.
It is supported also in FreeBSD, yes. Okay, yeah. I have sent part of them to people. If you email me, I'll just send it them to you. Well, the things we need to do is add the copyrights and clean up some style issues, etc. So I'm a bit ashamed to make them public now, but I'm happy to share them. Okay.
And by the way, how the hash table is implemented? So it's just plain hashing, or it's dynamic or static or whatever?
I think it is dynamic, but I'm not 100% sure. And also it has changed.
How working is organized in this way?
I have no idea. It might be RCU, though. It might be RCU. But again, again, I'm not 100% sure because they also use pin locks and mutexes. And the hash table is something that changes frequently, and you want the changes to be available soon. So I need to check. But anyways, that's OpenVSwitch code. It's the part that we didn't want to look at. I mean, we only look at things that don't compile. So if something compiles, we don't look at them. So we don't break them also. Okay, thanks.